Okay, well, it's lovely to be back with you. Great to hear those stories of what God has done. I'm very happy to hang around at the end and pray for anybody else who might need healing. So you haven't missed your moment. If you would love somebody to pray for you, that would be a real joy to do it. So yeah, my name's Chris. I'm very happily married to Jo for quite a long time now. We've got four grown-up children and we've got three grandchildren now. We had another little grandson born recently called Charlie, who's a delight. And yeah, I get granddad cuddles, which is lovely. And yeah, it's lovely to see my daughter, Millie, my baby girl, being a mum. It's a real privilege, isn't it? In fact, I get to pick the girls up, my granddaughters, from school sometimes. And I love that when I get to do that. And I was there the other day and I was just kind of thinking about my school days. And I was kind of reminiscing a bit. And my school days were a bit different. Age 11, I was packed off to boarding school. Or as I like to think of it, holiday camp, basically. I mean, it was endless fun. I mean, I could play sport all day. My mates were around me all the time. And so every minute of the day was crammed with either sport or music or mischief of some kind or other, you can imagine. And as I was thinking about my time there, one particular character came to mind. And it was our matron in our boarding house. Now, she was a fearsome and formidable woman. Her name was Maureen Fountain, and she was about 5'2" high, and she was about the same across the shoulders. You can picture her. Her hair had this unique style. Naturally, it would have been long, dark, with strands of grey in it, but no boy ever saw her with her hair down, because she would roll it up, and she would perch it on top her head and hold it in place with a few strategically placed knitting needles. That was Maureen Fountain. The sound of her hard-heeled leather shoes going through on the industrial lino of the dormitory floor would put dread into every single boy. And she would march through between the beds with her ample bosom parting boys in every single direction that she could. In fact, she was very adept at moving through the beds in the dormitories, even at night, even in the complete darkness. So she would stand at the door at one end and she would switch out the light. And then she would silently walk through between the beds with her many nylon underskirts, shuffling like a silent assassin. One of her particular hatreds was boys who ate food in the night. Now, of course, we all did it, but we got very good at disguising the evidence. We would hide it until the next morning, and like a scene from The Great Escape, Mars bar wrappers would be shaken out of our trouser legs while we were walking down to the sports fields to hide all the evidence. One particular evening, just before lights out, Matron was stood at the end by the door in our dormitory of eight. Her usual thing, "Good night, boys," she would say. She'd switch out the light and she'd go out onto the landing. The light goes out. "Good night, boys. Good night, matron." We hear the door click. And then, in the darkness, something happened. You see, there was one lad in my dormitory who was a sensitive lad, and so his mother used to placate him with tuck. So she would send in boxes of food for him every week. And what we didn't know was that inside this boy's bedside cabinet, his name was Ashley Whale, was a whole large, round, family-sized Mr. Kipling's Bakewell tart. And he stashed it there, and he was just waiting for the moment when Matron would turn out the light, the door would click, and then the feasting would begin. So there she was, the light went out, the door clicked, and Ashley Whale uttered 12 words which are forever burned on my memory. "Phew, now that old bag has gone, we can scoff the cake." Those were his last words that evening. Because instead of turning out the light and disappearing out onto the landing, Maureen Fountain was silently making her way through between the beds. "No, you won't, Ashley Whale," she said, and she launched herself to his bedside cabinet. She grabbed hold of the whole large, round, family-sized Mr. Kipling's Bakewell tart. She rushed out of the door, she shut the door, and there was silence. Nobody spoke. Nobody dared move. A good 4 minutes later, one of the boys, as a final act of defiance, said, "She'll scoff it now." And 8 unsatisfied boys drifted off to sleep. Well, the night passed, the weeks passed, the months passed, in fact, 5 years passed. And it came to our final term in this boarding house. And we'd grown now. And Maureen Fountain, this woman who had once been our arch enemy, still a formidable force, but now much more human to us. And to our surprise, on the final week, she invited the 16 boys who were leaving this boarding house to come to her flat for a tea party. And it seemed that this once terrifying monster of a woman had somehow softened. So we went in. We could see that she'd made a real effort. Pickled onion space invaders had been emptied into a green bowl. She had 3 types of fizzy drinks: Tizer, lemonade, and Cherryade. We were super impressed. We had a fun time. We had a relaxed time. We laughed with Matron about our adventures over the years. And we began to recount stories of our bitter conflicts and the famous occasion with the Bakewell tart. And at the mention of the famous incident of the tart in the night time, Maureen Fountain shuffled and bustled to her feet. She disappeared into her lobby and she returned with a smile. And in her hand, she carried Ashley Whale's large, round, family-sized Mr. Kipling's Bakewell tart. 5 years! 5 years she'd hung on to this. We had no idea why. She returned it to its rightful owner. Justice was done. We all had a big hug, and forgiveness was all around. Now, my reason for telling you this ridiculous story is that things aren't always what they seem. We had taken one look at this lady, Maureen Fountain, and we had put her in a category. We had judged her. We had made assumptions about her. But of course, when you become an adult, you know that those assumptions are not true. We thought she was the battle axe of all battle axes. Whereas in actual fact, she was a very caring, very loving woman. Now, here's the thing. I think in our world, we are very quick to make assumptions. Assumptions about people, assumptions about things, assumptions about life that aren't always true. Here's another story. Not this time from my life. This is a story that Jesus told, okay? And it's about 2 groups of people. And these 2 people, 2 groups of people, 2 families, let's say, let's call them the Smiths and the Joneses. They were building identical houses. So the Smiths are building their house over here. The Joneses are building their house over here. Now, Mr. Smith and his family, they'd found that they could excavate out a platform on the rocky hillside that was solid and firm, and they chose to build their house there. Somewhere where they would have a strong foundation right on the edge of the village, and their house would be securely built. Now, Mr. Jones and his family, they loved water sports. So they decided what they would do is there was a beautiful river and there was a lovely sandy beach that was almost like a little haven on the edge where they could sit, they could have their kayaks, they could have their picnics. And they decided that because they enjoyed the outdoor life, this would be where they would build their house. So we've got the Smiths over here and we've got the Joneses over here. And you know, the Smiths would kind of, from the hillside, look down on their friends, the Joneses, from time to time. And they would wonder about the choice they'd make. They'd see the Joneses there having fun, paddling in the cool water, enjoying the beachside life. And they sometimes thought, perhaps we made the wrong choice. Here they were, the Joneses, they were loving life. I mean, it was sunshine all day, it was barbecues in the evening, and they assumed that everything would be fine. They loved it. They would sit in the sun, and in the cool of the evening, they would just go into the river and bathe. On the whole, both families seemed pretty happy. They both seemed pretty content. And they assumed everything would be fine. But then one evening, as the sun went down and the cool evening breeze began to blow, a chill came over the sea. And a few large drops of rain began to fall. Both families ran towards their respective front doors to get away from the rain. They got in, they shut the door, they were safe from the storm that was growing outside. And both of them felt huge relief as they shook the rain from their raincoats, settled down to keep themselves warm and dry. But things aren't always what they seem. And we can't assume that they are. They were identical houses, both been built with exactly the same specifications, but they were about to have one major difference revealed. The rain, it came down. The wind, it blew and it beat against both of these houses. And the stream began to rise. And the Smiths looked on with horror at their friends, the Joneses, as the water began to rise. Because they could see that the rising water was beginning to wash away the foundations of their friend's house. And in one awful moment, with a creaking of timber and a breaking of glass, the house collapsed and was washed downstream. The newspaper report that the Smiths read the following day explained that the Joneses' house had been built on a sandy, unsecure part of the river. And the water had simply undermined it, and all of them had been lost. No bodies were found. Now, I've embellished it a little, but this is a story that Jesus told, and he told it to people over 2,000 years ago, and he wanted to make a very clear point. And it was this: don't make the dangerous assumption that if your life looks good on the outside, then you are safe. Because you're not. Don't assume. So how does this apply to you and I? I wonder what you think are some of the biggest assumptions in the UK today when it comes to things like faith and Christianity and Jesus. You know, I talk to a lot of people that are not believers in Jesus. And I think the biggest assumption that I come across in the UK today is this, and it's some kind of version of this: if I am good, I will go to heaven. It's something that people somehow have absorbed into their psyche. If I'm good, if I live a good life, if I don't make any big mistakes, then I'll go to heaven. I spoke to one lady, a young lady, and she told me, I know I'm going to heaven. I said, how do you know you're going to heaven? She said, well, firstly, I don't swear. And secondly, I don't bitch about bloody nobody. I thought, wow, you've just broken both of those in one go, one sentence. But we make this assumption. And we've made this strange assumption that we think that good people go to heaven and bad people go to hell. And there's some kind of division based on our morality or our behaviour. You know, I wonder if you asked yourself the same question today, what your answer would be. Have you made an assumption? Have you made the same assumption that good people must go to heaven and others do not go to heaven? Maybe you have. Maybe you even feel that somehow you ought to go to heaven because you haven't done anything awful. You're not a murderer. You're not a horrible person. On the whole, people like you. So you somehow feel, maybe I'm okay. And you can ask yourself that question, am I certain or have I assumed? Am I sure or have I made an assumption here? Because Jesus told that story because he didn't want people to make assumptions. He wanted them to be sure. And there is only really one group of people in the room today who can actually be sure and can answer that question with a yes. Everyone else may have assumed. But things aren't always what they seem. So we can't make the assumption that good people go to heaven and that bad people go to hell. And that's why Jesus told that story. Jesus once said this. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody comes to the Father except through me. So he was making it very clear that in order to come to God, we have to go through Jesus. Yeah? To come to God, we have to go through Jesus. Once you come through Jesus, then you're like one of the Smiths, if you like. You're building your house, your life, your identity, your security on something solid, on something that doesn't fall when trouble comes. You're building it on a rock. And when I finish today, I'm going to invite you very simply to come to him. Come to him. Remember Duncan's verse? Come to me. It's an invitation to every one of us. And I'm going to invite you to do that so that you too can build your life, not on an assumption, but on something way, way more solid. You see, here's the truth. If you build your life anywhere other than on Jesus Christ, then you are like the Jones family. You're building on something that shifts, something that changes, something that is uncertain, and therefore something that makes you vulnerable. And when trouble comes, it all collapses. So some of you today will have built your life on your career. You've made a great success. You've done well. You've climbed the ladder. You're getting the bonus. But what happens when redundancy comes? You see, if we've built everything on our career, then we're building on sand because it's not secure. You and I know that. Maybe you built your security on your bank balance, your savings, your nest egg. And then what happens when cost of living crises emerge and pension pots are diminished? We can't build our security on finance. If 2008 didn't teach us, taught us anything, it taught us that, didn't it? It's sandy. It gets undermined. It gets washed away. Here's a challenge. I think most of us actually build our lives around ourselves. I think we're largely selfish. Our comforts, our needs, our wants. Now, I know me. I'm not a solid foundation. I need something extrinsic. I need something more than me. I need something outside of me that is going to be more secure. Because I know that my mood can change depending on how much or how little I've eaten. My wife tells me I get hangry. Come on, we're going shopping. I can't. Why not? I haven't eaten. She feeds me like an animal at the zoo, and then I'll be placated. Okay, I can come to Primark now. Yes, I will sift through those 17 t-shirts. But we do, don't we? We build our lives around ourselves. Even our own abilities, our own capabilities, self-reliant. And we think that that will be enough to make us secure for life. But you know how much your life changes. Different seasons, different situations. Now, when Jesus told that story about the two houses, he used a word to describe those people who built their house, their life on the sand. And that word was foolish. Foolish. I mean, now, that's quite a strong word, isn't it? To describe somebody as foolish. So basically, Jesus is saying, if you're building your life on anything other than on him, a secure, solid, strong rock foundation, that's foolish. Why? Well, because you've not thought about the future. You've made no provision for what happens when storms come your way. If you built it on all those other things that I mentioned, it's unwise, isn't it? Because they're not reliable things to build your life on. And here's the challenge. There is a storm coming. Now, I'm not talking here about the little troubles of life and the storms of life. They will come whether you're a believer in Jesus or not. In fact, I think the trouble really started when I became a Christian. I'm not talking here about the trials we go through. We all face those. Certainly, actually, being a believer does help. But there is a bigger storm coming. It's a global storm that will cause such devastation that today I want every single one of you to be absolutely, totally, and utterly certain that you have built your house on a rock for when this storm comes. So Jesus called these guys, the Smiths, foolish for building there. Do you know what he described these guys who built their house on the rock? What word did he use there? Wise. Why? I like that word. Wise. When people come up to me and go, thank you, Chris. There was so much wisdom in what you said there. I'm like, yes. I like being wise. Wise is good. I'd certainly rather choose wise than foolish. Thanks, Chris, for your foolish contribution to the meeting today. But wise. Why wise? Because they were prepared. They were ready for every eventuality. They were ready. If the storm came, that rock was going nowhere. Them, their possessions, their family, they were safe. They were secure. Back to this storm that is coming. And this storm will separate the Smiths from the Joneses. It will separate the wise from the foolish. So what is this big storm? Well, this storm is set at a date in the future. And it's a date that none of us know, but that we will all witness. And this storm comes on the day when each of us will have a face-to-face, one-to-one with Jesus Christ, who we've been singing about this morning. And in that moment, he will make an assessment of us. And he alone will make a decision on whether we are with him for eternity or we are not. That's the storm that's coming that all of us will face. Now, those of you that have made an assumption that because you've been a good person, you're going to be with him and you'll go to what we might describe as a heaven, in kind of common language, if you've made that assumption, at that moment, you are in for a big shock. I want to read you a couple of verses, well, one verse really, from the Bible, And these are words that Jesus himself spoke, and it describes what will really happen to you and I on the day when this storm hits us. And it's from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 25, spoken by Jesus, and it's verse 31 of chapter 25. The phrase Son of Man, Jesus is talking about himself, and he says this: when the Son of Man comes, when I come, in his glory, and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Do you see that? There's this moment when Jesus has a line of humanity, which includes you and I, and he will separate us in that moment. And the sheep will go that way, the goats will go that way, the Smiths will go that way, the Joneses will go that way, the wise will go that way, the foolish will go that way. Two lines of people with two very, very different destinies. What does Jesus say as he separates them? To the sheep on this side, Jesus will say this: come. Again, invitation. Come, you who are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. And they will be led to eternal life, to love, to joy, to peace, to God and his beautiful presence. The other line is different. It's a different story. And this is the words of Jesus to those in this line: depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. And they'll go to eternal punishment, to an eternity of utter selfishness. No love, no joy, no peace, nothing good, an absence of the presence of God. Now, the important thing for us to understand today is that these two lines were not divided up by who had been good and who had not been good. Please, please hear that. Please don't make that assumption. The decisive issue is not our behaviour. The decisive issue is our relationship to Jesus. Remember what Jesus said? I am the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody comes to the Father except through me. So unless we've personally come to Jesus, you and I individually, meaningfully, faithfully, personally, unless we've done that, then we're in the Jones line, the goat line, the fool line. But the moment we come to Jesus, we change. We join the Smith line, the sheep line, the wise line, the heaven line. Now, I'm going to finish in a few minutes, but I want to ask you an important question first. And while I'm asking you this question, I wonder if the band could come up for me. Would that be okay? Here's the important question. If today were to be that day when that storm comes and we have our face-to-face, one-to-one with Jesus, and he makes an assessment of us based on whether we've come to him, remember, not based on our behaviour, here's the question. Which line would you end up in? Are you certain, or have you made an assumption? You see, if you're headed for the wrong line, today is for you. because this is swap day, change lines day. This is go from there to there day. This is go from goat to sheep day. This is to go from lost to found, from dead to alive. This is life change of the highest order. And I want to give you the opportunity today, if you're not certain, to change line. Now, remember, I said we simply need to come to Jesus. It's not enough just to have a vague belief in God. Okay? Satan believes in God. He won't be there. He won't be in this line. We need to come to Jesus. How do we get in this line? The heaven line, the joy line, the eternal line. Well, put it simply, we need to be related to God. God, who became this incredible man called Jesus, who lived this perfect life on earth, who was then cruelly killed by being nailed to a Roman cross, even though he'd done nothing wrong. And on that cross, he took into his own body the punishment that you and I deserved for ignoring God. And he dealt with it forever. He dealt with your sin and my sin and everything that would then, now, or forever separate us from God, and made a way for us to be related to God as Father, for us to come and join the family. And because we're now, the minute we come to Jesus, we're forgiven, we are rightfully called sons and daughters of God. We're adopted into his family. We're legitimately forgiven, legally free and in. We're rescued. We've gone from death to life. We've gone from this side to this side. We've changed lines. The minute we come to Jesus and believe in the cross. And that's all you have to do today. To simply believe that Jesus is God. And that when he died, he did it out of love for you, out of love for me, so that on this day you could swap lanes. He did it for you. He did it so you could be forgiven. He did it so you could be clean. He did it so you've got something exceptional to look forward to for the rest of your life. So here's the thing. In 20 seconds' time, I'm going to invite you to change lines. Okay? All you need to do is come. Now, coming is a kind of action, isn't it? Something you do physically. So I'm actually going to ask you to be really brave. I'm going to ask everybody to bow their heads. And if you want to change lanes, if you've made that assumption today, and now actually you're saying, do you know what? I want to be sure. I'm not going to embarrass you. I'm not going to make you stand up or do anything uncomfortable. But while the heads are bowed, I am going to ask you to raise your hand. And I'll simply acknowledge it by saying thank you. And you can catch my eye so that you know I've seen you. And then I'm going to lead you in a prayer. Not out loud for everybody to hear. I'll say it out loud. You can say it inside so you don't feel embarrassed. People on your left and on your right who you may or may not know so well. Okay? And that raising of your hand is you saying, I want to come to Jesus. I want to change lines. I want something way, way more secure for the rest of my life than putting my trust in myself, my career, my money, or anything else. I want my life to be based on something that will last forever. I want to base my life on something that doesn't change, on something that is secure. I want to choose life rather than death. And I don't want anybody to rob you of this moment. Because in the moment, sometimes fear can creep in. Because there's a very real enemy who would love to see you disappear off that way. Really would. Hates your guts. Would love to see your life undermined. But there is a very real God who loves you with an everlasting love. Choose him. In your head right now, choose him. Choose peace. Choose life. Choose joy. Choose God. Choose Jesus today. Make that decision. so that when I ask you to put your hand up, you know you've made the decision already, and this is just an indication that I've done it. So are you ready? This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask everybody to bow their heads so that you don't feel self-conscious. And I'm going to count down from 5 to 0. When I get to 0, if you want to come to Jesus, you just raise your hand and I'll say thank you. And then after we put our hands down, I'll lead you in a prayer. Okay, you ready? Make your decision. Be ready. Still your heart. Know that God loves you. And he wants you home, safe, forever. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Well done. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Let's just give it a moment. Pop your hands down, those 5 of you that put your hands up. Keep your heads bowed for a moment. Are there any others? Wish you had? You want to be sure? Yeah. Just going to give you a moment, because this is a life and death decision. Okay. Those of you that put your hands up, will you pray this with me in your head? Jesus, I recognize that I have made assumptions. And that I've assumed that because I thought of myself as a good person, that you would welcome me into your family. Forgive me for making those assumptions. Forgive me for my sin that separates me from you. Forgive me for my independence and my attitude towards you. I come to you today, Jesus. I choose today to swap lines. I choose today to move from foolishness to wisdom. I choose today from moving from being a goat to being a sheep, part of your flock, great shepherd. I choose today, rather than relying on my own wits, my own self, my own abilities, my own resources, I choose to cast myself onto you, knowing that you are a solid rock. Thank you that by your death on a cross, you made it possible for me to come to know God and be adopted into his family today. I choose in, Jesus. I choose you. And I ask you to come into my life now by your Holy Spirit. Come and fill me with your love. Come and lead me. And I pray that even as I go from this place today, I will know that because of this moment, my life, my days, and my eternity are totally secure. Give me that assurance right now, Lord, that I am rescued. And that when that storm comes, instead of facing your judgment, I will receive the love and the welcome of God. Thank you for loving me. Amen.